Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
This was the last place on Earth you'd want to be in 1976.
And that location, that specific time, it's really essential to understanding just how chilling this case is. We're not talking about some, you know, known crime hub.
No, exactly.
No.
This is the quiet, seemingly impenetrable heart of America. We're talking rural Nebraska.
Right. And the stage is set for this moment of profound vulnerability. We've got Ringo Barr, a traveling businessman, just facing the ultimate annoyance, stranded overnight flight delay. Tedious.
Just wants to kill time, looking for some kind of distraction, maybe something normal.
And he accepts an invitation he really shouldn't have.
Thinking it's just, you know, a friendly gesture from a local guy he met. But according to the accounts, the investigative excerpts we've got, what happened next wasn't just a party.
No. It was described as a terrifying psychological endurance test orchestrated by this bizarre host.
Played out in front of an audience that was just profoundly, unsettlingly inanimate.
Okay, so let's establish the parameters for this deep dive. We're digging into the 1976 Mannequin Party case. Our mission, really, is to take these personal accounts, these thematic analyses, and expose the architecture of the trap itself.
Yeah, we're looking beyond just the, like, horror movie surface of it all.
Right, investigating the systemic elements that might be at play here.
And we have to unpack some themes that are, frankly, deeply unnerving. Number one, this terrifying idea of hospitality being weaponized, used as a trap.
That classic human desire for kindness basically turned against you.
And there's number two, the psychological effect, that really unsettling feeling of the uncanny crowd, that visceral gut feeling when something looks almost human, but it's just wrong.
And the third theme, maybe the most vital one for Ringo Barr's survival in this story, the absolute necessity of a strategy built entirely on patience.
It's like a masterclass, isn't it? How a system, maybe, of Casher can exploit just mundane circumstances, everyday frustrations,
but completely shatter someone's sense of reality long before any actual physical violence happens.
And the whole nightmare, it started with something so universal. Ringo Barr was just a businessman, stuck on a work trip, flight delayed overnight in Nebraska.
That unplanned pocket of time, that urge to escape the airport boredom.
That's what kicked it all off. Just a simple inconvenience created the opening.
And that's the vulnerability right there. You're stuck in limbo, tired, stressed, maybe looking for a connection or just something to do. Your guard is naturally lower.
You're looking for normal in a strange place.
Exactly. And that desperation, I mean, it makes you a potentially easy target for a very specific kind of deception, one that's masked by charm, by local knowledge.
Okay, let's start with the visual here. Picture Ringo leaving that sterile, kind of temporary comfort of the airport terminal.
Those flickering fluorescent lights.
Yeah, trading that for the unknown lights of some local town nearby. It's an easy decision to make in your head, right? Anything's better than sitting at the gate for hours.
And that step, seemingly so innocent, just leaving the known, predictable, regulated zone of the airport, that was the very first decision that, well, opened the door to this whole legend.
You just wanted a normal night out.
And that desire for normalcy, it turned out to be the critical misstep.
So, with time to kill, maybe a bit curious, Ringo decides to drive out, explore the local area that evening. And where does he end up?
A local bar. A watering hole. A place where, you know, anonymity can disappear pretty quickly.
Right. And that's where he runs into Didi Duat, the architect of the trap, as you called him.
Exactly. And the sources are very clear, meticulous almost, about how Didi presented himself initially.
He immediately goes for this angle.
Yeah. He tries to establish trust right away by claiming he was a local celebrity. Now think about what that claim actually does psychologically.
Wait, hang on. Why local celebrity? Wouldn't just being friendly be enough? Seems a bit much.
But it's a crucial distinction, you see. Being a local celebrity, whether it's true or not, it instantly grants a kind of status, integration, community endorsement almost.
So Ringo, the outsider.
Right. Ringo's immediately dealing with someone who presents themselves not just as friendly, but as known, integrated, and therefore presumably safe within that community. It cuts through skepticism faster than just being, you know, nice.
Okay, so the trap wasn't just simple charm. It was baited with this idea of local prestige, reliability. Diddy seemed friendly enough.
Which is the classic preamble, isn't it? Accepting hospitality from someone you really shouldn't. You're away from home, you meet this friendly local, promises a good time.
The natural human thing is to say yes.
Which brings us straight to the invitation. And the critical moment where control gets transferred. Diddy invites Ringo to one of his parties later that night. Seems like the perfect fix for a boring evening.
But the really fatal detail.
The fatal detail is that Diddy offered him a ride to the location.
Ah. The moment Ringo says yes to that ride, he's basically outsourced his own safety. His control is gone.
Completely. He cements his dependency on this stranger. He removes his own ability to decide where he is or how he gets back to the airport. He's probably picturing, what, a quick drive to a bustling party nearby?
Yeah, something easy.
And that power imbalance, it becomes absolute almost immediately. Once they're driving, Ringo is physically reliant on Diddy. We see this often in these documented cases, these capture narratives, even in crowded areas sometimes.
Isolation comes first.
Isolation is often a psychological precursor, yeah. But here, the isolation is geographical, and it's cemented the second he accepts that ride. There's no easy way out, no quick taxi back once they leave the main town area.
Okay, so this is where things shift. It goes from feeling like a maybe slightly odd social thing to creeping dread.
Right.
Imagine being in that car. You're watching the city lights, those comforting clusters, just retreat fast.
And they're replaced by this aggressive darkness pressing right up against the windows.
And you realize the road is just stretching on
and
on, way further than seems necessary for any local party.
That initial unease, Ringo reports, it came directly from that geographical reality. As they drove, Ringo started feeling that something felt off.
The road just went endlessly into the countryside,
taking them demonstrably far away from the city lights. The physical environment itself starts screaming danger, but by then, well, Ringo's already captive to the journey itself.
And as a businessman, Ringo would be used to judging distance, time, right?
Mm-hmm.
He'd know this was too far. The anxiety must have been climbing.
Absolutely. He couldn't just, you know, open the door and bail out. They were already deep into nowhere.
Yeah.
And that's why the sources really zero in on the distance. This is our cold fact pattern breaker that grounds the legend a bit. Ringo specifically questioned Diddy, asked why the party was scheduled in the middle of nowhere.
So it confirms it wasn't just a short hop. It was a significant, deliberate, isolating drive.
A drive so long it made any reasonable, immediate return impossible without Diddy's help. This design choice, it exhausted and isolated Ringo before he even got to the final stage of the deception.
But if the point is psychological terror, why drive so far? Why not just have this setup closer to town? Seems inefficient if you're trying to trap someone.
Well, the extreme isolation serves a few functions. First, it guarantees silence and privacy. No neighbors close enough to hear anything.
Okay.
Second, it elevates Diddy's power completely. Ringo is totally dependent on him now, not just for a ride, but for basic survival out there.
Right, lost in the dark.
And thirdly, the anxiety of the journey itself acts like a preparation phase. It wears the victim down mentally, so their defenses are already low when they finally arrive.
And then, after that grueling, anxious, isolating drive, comes the calculated relief, the destination facade.
Suddenly a house appears out of the darkness.
And it looks alive. It's described as buzzing with music and lights, a perfect manufactured visual sign of normal life, of civilization breaking through all that darkness.
The psychological timing there is, well, impeccable. Ringo, just relieved the journey is over, relieved the promise seems real, he lets his guard down.
He reports following Diddy inside, genuinely thinking the place looked alive with people.
Yeah, the exhaustion from the drive is momentarily forgotten. He sees what looks like the social interaction he was hoping for.
So the trap banks entirely on that powerful effect. Delayed gratification, manufactured normality, you endure the stress, you get the sudden relief.
And in that moment, that brief window of lowered vigilance, the final stage of the trap clicks into place. Okay, Ringo's crossed the threshold. He's inside. Music's playing. Lights are bright. He's ready to meet these partygoers, did he promise?
The environment looks normal, feels normal for a second.
But the contents are about to reveal the horror.
The moment of introduction. This is the critical hinge point, isn't it? Diddy leans in, still playing the friendly host.
Still operational, yeah. And he says, let me introduce you to my friends.
So Ringo follows him, expecting, you know, handshakes, names, the usual party stuff.
But that expectation is just instantly brutally subverted.
The sources convey this physical shock, a real gut reaction. His account says His stomach dropped.
Yeah, that sudden, immediate, physiological knowing that something is deeply, profoundly wrong as he takes in the room.
And this is the core detail. The concrete fact anchoring this whole bizarre legend. The guests weren't people at all. They were mannequins.
Meticulously posed, like partygoers, some leaning on walls, some sitting on couches, all frozen in these various social positions.
Let's go.
And what's fascinating here is the psychological response. Mannequins, they live deep in that uncanny valley, right?
Yeah, creepy.
They're close enough to human form that our brains register human, but their absolute stillness, their lack of life, it triggers this primal alarm. The brain just struggles to reconcile human shape with inert material.
Reports say Ringo's first reaction was nervous laughter. He treated it like some kind of joke.
It's a psychological defense mechanism. Why is that reaction so common when people encounter something profoundly uncanny like this?
Trying to make it make sense.
Exactly. It's the mind desperately trying to rationalize this deeply wrong pattern it's seeing. The reality that he's surrounded by dozens of silent, non-human things and the guy who brought him as a potential captor is too terrifying to process immediately.
The brain defaults to prank.
Yeah, it classifies it as a sophisticated, maybe twisted prank. Humor, or that nervous laughter, it's like a cognitive firewall against immediate panic, against a complete psychological break.
But that rationalization, it only lasts a split second, because this is the moment the trap... Yeah, that substitution replacing real human interaction with these inert plastic things, it confirms the intention. This wasn't a prank gone wrong.
No. The plastic crowd represented his new companions. Permanent ones, maybe? Serving as these chilling, silent witnesses to whatever Diddy Duat had planned.
The mannequin room wasn't the party. It was the display case.
Okay, so the narrative takes a sharp turn now. It shifts from passive horror, just taking it all in, to active strategic survival.
Ringo gets it immediately.
Hmm.
Panic, confrontation. That would be lethal.
Right. So the core theme we talked about, survival through patience, takes over completely. His only leverage now is time and his ability to perfectly mask the absolute terror he must be feeling.
And this is the really agonizing part of the story. For the next hour, the account says Ringo pretended to play along.
Maintaining this facade of composure, of normalcy, while inside his mind is just racing, desperate.
What did he actually do during that hour? How do you play along with mannequins and a captor?
The strategy demanded... Basically observing Diddy's routine, his behavior, never making panicked eye contact, but also, crucially, never meeting the fixed, dead gaze of the mannequins for too long either.
That sounds intense.
He would have had to nod, maybe move around a little to seem casual, all while desperately calculating any possible escape route. Imagine the sheer mental effort needed to navigate that silent crowd, moving carefully among those fixed plastic smiles, knowing your life hangs on perfect acting.
An hour of that kind of pressure. It's a psychological eternity. Why didn't Diddy just restrain him right away? Why let him play along?
The sources suggest Diddy was perhaps enjoying the psychological control. The power trip derived from watching his victim squirm under this fake casualness.
So less about quick capture, more about the game.
It points more towards a prolonged psychological game, yeah.
Yeah.
Meant to maximize the victim's dread. He was watching Ringo, probably waiting for that facade to crack, making sure he was compliant before, well, before whatever came next.
But Ringo didn't just wait. He made a calculated move to try and regain control. Plan A.
Yes. The concrete detail here is that Ringo finally tried to escape by going for the car keys. He thought that was his quickest way out. But they were nowhere to be found.
Ah, okay. That's a crucial detail, isn't it? It confirms Diddy wasn't just winging it.
Exactly. The keys being gone proves intentionality.
Yeah.
Advanced preparation. The most obvious escape route was deliberately blocked beforehand.
Forcing Ringo off his plan.
It forced him to abandon that planned escape and pivot to just pure, unplanned desperation. Diddy wasn't some random lunatic. He was a meticulous captor operating within a prepared system.
So with the keys gone, his main option vanishes. He resorts to the last, most desperate measure. Just run for it.
Pure flight. The source and describe him bolting out the door, running into the night, leaving that brightly lit house with its silent, staring occupants behind him.
He literally ran out into the pitch black Nebraska countryside.
He traded a known immediate danger, Diddy Duat, in that awful room for a massive, isolating, unknown danger, the dark, open, hostile prairie. And remember, this is 1976.
No GPS, no cell phone.
Miles from anywhere, probably. Exhausted already. Running on pure adrenaline.
The physical toll must have been immense. The accounts confirm that hours later, Ringo was utterly depleted. He collapsed on the side of some road.
He covered significant ground, which tells you something about the isolation, but he physically drained every last reserve he had, leaving him in that final stage of vulnerability.
He survived the house, survived the initial run.
But now he's broken down, desperate, and probably tragically starting to feel a tiny bit hopeful that the worst is over. This utter exhaustion becomes the final, maybe intended, stage of the trap.
He's completely at the mercy of the environment now, and anyone who might happen to drive by.
The system, whatever it was, successfully isolated him, terrified him, and physically collapsed him, ready for the next step.
And this is where the story takes this truly sinister circular turn. It suggests the threat wasn't just Diddy, wasn't just that one farmhouse.
No, the scope seems much wider.
Okay, picture Ringo. Collapsed on the roadside, maybe semi-conscious. The very first hints of pre-dawn light are just starting to make the darkness a little less absolute.
And then he hears it, an engine, and sees the sudden, incredibly welcome sight of headlights cutting through the gloom, approaching him.
Apparent salvation, right? A pickup truck pulls over. The driver leans out, asks if Ringo needs help.
For Ringo, after everything he's just been through, this must have felt like the absolute return to normal. A real human, offering kindness in the middle of nowhere. A complete reversal of the terror.
He must have thought, I'm safe. It's over.
He's breathless, probably in shock in this fragile post-trauma state. He whispered his thanks. That moment of total relief, total gratitude, believing this driver was offering the ultimate rescue from isolation.
Believing he was finally safe.
But that sense of relief, it's only there to be immediately violently shattered. The sources save the most chilling detail for this climax. It confirms the threat wasn't just individual. It felt systemic.
The driver smiled back at him. A smile that Ringo later reported felt eerily similar to Diddy Duet's unsettling grin back at the house.
And then the driver delivered the final crushing twist, a direct quote that horrifyingly mirrors the original fatal invitation that started it all.
What did he say?
The man smiled back and said, "No problem, but are you ready to party?"
Oh my God, that is devastating. The micro takeaway just hits you like a ton of bricks. The trap extended way beyond the farmhouse walls.
The party was mobile. It was operational across the entire isolated prairie, it seems.
It suggests that just being stranded, just being vulnerable out there, was potentially part of this orchestrated system of capture, where hospitality or help is just a repeating lure to get you back in.
And this specific case, the mannequin party, it now connects really profoundly to some broader patterns documented in the source materials we have, patterns that confirm the sense of organizational depth. We need to bring in two key concepts from our investigative index to really grasp the implication of this chilling repetition.
Okay, let's talk about the files then. The sources mentioned the Klaus Richter file and the Aladdin file. For the listener, we definitely need some context here. What are these files actually documenting, and how does that connect back to a businessman running from plastic people in Nebraska?
Good point. Yeah. Let's clarify this internal shorthand. The Klaus Richter file, essentially, it documents cases where the victim's existence is either symbolically or sometimes physically replaced, where the erasure itself becomes the evidence. In the Richter case specifically, the victim's identity was replaced by a perfect yet totally inert copy while he was absent.
Okay, so we apply that concept here. The mannequins aren't just creepy props in the house. They are the symbolic evidence of erasure.
Exactly.
They're replacing the expected human element of a party. It suggests that Diddy Duet and whoever this pickup driver was, they're in the business of harvesting people, deleting them, and then filling the gap, the vacuum, with these inert copies.
The fixed plastic smiles become the markers of absence.
Precisely. The emptiness where the real party, the real people, should be that substitution is maybe the strongest sign of a deeper organized system at work. A system designed to remove the person while minimizing the trace, perhaps.
And the other file you mentioned, the Aladdin file, that one concerns traps related to treasure or perceived treasure, right?
Yes, that's right. The Aladdin file tracks systems where something that seems valuable or desirable to treasure is actually nothing more than bait. Bait to lead the victim into captivity.
So in Ringo's case, the treasure wasn't gold or jewels. It was the promise of safe, enjoyable human contact, relief from boredom and isolation.
The treasure was hospitality itself. Diddy offered that connection Ringo desperately wanted while he was stranded.
But that connection was just the delivery mechanism, the way to get him into isolation.
And that final horrifying question from the pickup driver confirms the loop, doesn't it? The system was designed to find the victim again, even after they escaped the first snare.
It strongly suggests that Diddy Duet's operation wasn't fixed to one house or one host. It felt like an entire mechanism designed to capture, isolate, and then cycle the targets back into the system using the lure of assistance, of rescue.
They were collecting something, and the mannequins were the chilling, silent accounting of that collection.
This raises a critical point about the setting, though. Why Nebraska in 1976? If this is some organized system, wouldn't a higher traffic area, like a major airport hub in Chicago or New York, be more efficient for finding targets?
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive.
Well, the choice of location often relates to low scrutiny and geographical leverage. In a really remote area, like the Nebraska countryside back in the mid-70s, law enforcement would have been sparser, more centralized.
Easier to operate unnoticed.
Exactly. The isolation allowed Diddy and his associates, potentially, to carry out this prolonged psychological manipulation and capture without the immediate threat of discovery. Plus, the vulnerability of stranded travelers might actually be higher there in some ways than in a busy urban airport where help or security is usually just moments away.
So it's like a low-risk, high-reward hunting ground. Specifically chosen for targets like stranded businessmen, people out of their element.
The entire event, therefore, it doesn't feel like chaos. It feels like a systematic, carefully layered mechanism designed to exploit the mundane, dismantle psychological reality through the uncanny, and ensure capture through sheer geographical isolation. #outro.
Okay, so let's synthesize this journey Ringo Barr went through. It started with such a casual error, right? Accepting a ride from a seemingly charming stranger.
And it escalated into this direct confrontation with an organized, deeply uncanny psychological mechanism. We identified two really effective layers in this particular trap.
Yeah, first, that powerful isolation by geography, forcing Ringo way out into the countryside, stripping away all external control and any chance of easy help.
And second, that brutal psychological manipulation. Achieved by substituting genuine human connection with those inanimate, incredibly unsettling objects. The terror was just perfectly engineered for maximum disorientation before any final capture.
But the most profound, the most chilling detail really remains the scope of the system.
Right. The source material emphasizes that the prairie was empty, but the party kept finding him. It suggests Diddy Duet and that pickup driver weren't just lone actors playing a sick game.
It felt like the entire local framework almost was potentially just waiting. Waiting for Ringo to break down, guaranteeing that escaping into isolation only led back to the organized trap.
Which leaves us with the final, really unsettling question for you, the listener, to think about long after this deep dive is done.
If the guests that Diddy Duet introduces are only mannequins, what exactly are Diddy Duet and the pickup driver collecting from the humans they managed to capture?
A plastic smile fixed under highway lights.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's free.